No questions? Anybody know? What do you think it is? It's not a very difficult thing to penetrate.
The kingdom of warrior.
A kingdom of what?
A kingdom, and then like a king, queen, warrior, it's like a country. So.
That's all? And what's the significance of Shambhala? Just think, in our Shambhala, it's just queens. Does anybody know about Shambhala?
Shambhala is a pure land, and then just make our system in a tribe.
Make our what?
Like a monarchy system. Like in our world, monarchy system is like involved with volume and aggression like that.
With involved with?
Our world, our monarchy system with
volume. Our work with robbery. I can't hear you.
I miss our world.
Our world has?
Has volume and aggressive fighting. But
warrior?
It's a
did you say warrior?
Violent.
Oh, violent.
Violent and fighting. But this monarchy system is with Dharma.
This, what's monarchy? Monarchy.
It's with Dharma. It's opposite like our world. But it's the system is ruled by sin. But the mind is different.
What does everybody think? Sounds pretty I don't know, interesting to me. What does everybody think? Chia, what do you think Shambhala is? A monarchy with a lot of queens? Did you see Chia and Shambhala? Chia being Shambhala thinking who's the queen? Okay, question. Are there queens in Shambhala? Joy? James, do you think there are queens in Shambhala? What do you think, KB? Do you think there are queens in Shambhala? No queens. Why not? Okay. Then for him, queens are a deviancy that cannot exist in the Pure Land. Well, we'll debate about that another day, because I don't really know. What do you think, Fatma? Do you think there are queens in Shambhala?
It's no queen and no... It's same. It's
everybody is a eunuch, neuter.
Because, yeah, it's all purely the mind, the state of mind. Focus on the in the form.
Not necessarily. What do you think, Chia? Oh boy, is that the right one to ask? Yeah.
I think because they say that they can be king and queen, and sometimes you can switch around. It's not necessary.
The king becomes a queen?
No, I mean the rule. I'm talking about their functions and responsibilities.
Xia says the king can become a queen. And the queen becomes a king. Where's Susan and Kendra are when we need them? Candy already became the queen, Susan became the king, alright.
I think just the role in taking part in your own functions and responsibility, and also to the mention to the Shambhala, the real Shambhala world, and then apply to our real human life how we can come.
There are many different types of Pure Lands. A Pure Land is a place where we can achieve or go to in order to do deeper and more faster Dharma practice, where the necessities for living, crops, food, living, housing is very easy. For example, on a normal, ordinary scale, it should be easier to do Dharma practice in Malaysia than it would be to do in some countries in the world where it's disease-ridden, or difficult, or very hot, or full of earthquakes and tsunamis. So what happens is in Malaysia, it should be much easier to do Dharma practice. Why? If we get sick, the hospitals here are very good. The water is very clean. The environment is very clean. It's free of all types of diseases and problems. It's got plenty of food and is relatively easy to live. Therefore, in Malaysia, it should be much easier to do Dharma practice because what we need to do Dharma practice is more readily available, more easier to support life. So like that, if in our world we have countries like Malaysia where it's easier to do Dharma practice, by the power of our karma, there should be places that are even better and higher to do Dharma practice. That is a Pure Land. So therefore, in Pure Land, in Malaysia we can get Dharma teachings, but it's not uninterrupted or when we want. It's according to schedule and time. But in Holy Lands or Pure Lands, we can get Dharma teachings uninterrupted and practice, and what we need to survive is very, very easy. And the reason for that is an outcome of our positive karma, merits. So therefore, the Pure Lands are places where we can reach. They are emanations of the Buddha's mind, or the particular Buddha's mind and their qualities. So a Pure Land can exist on the basis of the Buddha's own enlightened mind. Why? Because where we exist right now is an emanation of our own karma. Why is it an emanation of our own karma? If it's not an emanation of our own karma, then everybody in this world will experience exactly the same thing. Everybody would be pleasant or everybody would be unpleasant. But in one world, in one continent, in one country, in one city, in one house, even in one corner of the room, people can have totally different experiences. Why do they have totally different experiences? Because they have different karmic dispositions from their previous lives. They have different karmas that open up. So therefore, even in one room, people here, some can be very sick, some can be very sleepy, some can be alert, some can be very happy, some can be very angry, some can be very cold, some can be very hot. Even in one room, we can experience many different things due to our karma. So samsara in general is an extension of our karma, what we experience. That's one. The second thing is, Pure Lands are an extension of the Buddha's mind. So if you make a particular connection to a certain Buddha, you connect with their mind, through your practice, then you can take rebirth in their Pure Land. Now, Vajrayana's paradise, Kichara paradise, or Amitabha's heaven, or Tushita, are examples of different Pure Lands. But during Lord Buddha's time, there was a king, and he belonged to the kingdom of Shambhala. And Shambhala is a kingdom that is supposed to be existent within the Himalayas, because the Himalayas is huge. There are huge hundreds of kilometers of land that are unexplored. It is just too cold. And the snow there are hundreds and hundreds of years old, not melted and not changed. If you look at an aerial view, it's massive and huge. For example, when I went to Nepal and I went to one of these shops to sell posters, they show the Himalayas, they just show a portion. It's vast and huge. It's impossible for people to trek through. Impossible. So what happens is the Himalayan kingdom is a place where this place, Shambhala, resides. Hence the movies in the West, they base, like the magic of Shangri-La or going to Shangri-La, they base it on that. It's a place where it resembles a Pure Land, but it is a place on this planet. And we can go there physically. Just like some people can see spirits and some people cannot see spirits. Some people can see Shambhala, some people cannot see Shambhala. But you need to have a karmic affinity. But it is a physical place with a physical body, with a physical manifestation, that we don't have to die to go there. We can walk there, we can get there, and we have the karma. Some people are reborn there. In this Shambhala kingdom, it's ruled by a Shambhala king. The Shambhala kings are called Rigdens, or Chakrabartins, or let's make it simple, Rigden. R-I-G-D-E-N, as it says in the book. The Rigdens are the Dharma kings of this area, and the reason for that is during Shakyamuni's time, the Rigden of that time went down to India and requested teachings from Lord Buddha himself. Lord Buddha gave teachings to many, many beings during his lifetime. He gave more teachings and more, I'm sorry, he gave teachings, more of his teachings are hidden in non-human worlds, such as the Nagas, such as the Shambhala kingdom. More of Buddha Shakyamuni's teachings are taken or hidden away. For example, when Nagarjuna came, as predicted by Buddha, when Nagarjuna came, he received the Prajnaparamita teachings from the realm of the Nagas. This is well known. And from his giving teachings, it pervaded the whole Buddhist world, including China. His teachings on emptiness. So what happens is those teachings are exactly propagated by him, but taught by Lord Buddha, preserved in the Naga lands. So for example, there are many realms of existence in this world that we cannot see and perceive, that the teachings are hidden away, practice. Why? Some teachings are specifically for those beings. Some teachings are for those beings and later we get it back for the humans. Some teachings are for the humans, preserved in those places to be given later again. So what happens is, in Tibet you have a tradition called termas. Termas are teachings hidden in the elements, or in mountains, or in trees, or in people's minds, that are opened up much later to benefit people at the right time. So like that, Buddha's teachings, more were taken away and preserved in non-human realms than in human realms. That's one. So Shambhala's king went with his entourage and received teachings from Lord Buddha. He received the four principal paths and the 12 independent links, the three principal paths, all that he received, the basics. And on top of that, a special set of teachings that Buddha entrusted to them was the Kalachakra set of teachings. So the Kalachakra Tantra and initiation, Lord Buddha himself manifested in South India in the form of Kalachakra deity and initiated the king of Shambhala and his entourage, and then gave him the complete oral transmission, the planting of the seeds, and also the complete commentary on how to do the Kalachakra practice to become enlightened. So the king, after receiving that from Lord Buddha, went back to the Shambhala kingdom and practiced. He practiced it from his heart. He became a master lineage holder of the Kalachakra teachings, and he taught that to his subjects. So in Shambhala, they practice the Kalachakra teachings very, very much. That was what they received from Lord Buddha. So what happens is, the current Shambhala king should be the 21st. Should be the 21st. So what happens is, people who do prayers to be reborn in Shambhala, they can be reborn there. And some lamas have visions. Some lamas can actually travel there. Some people can travel there astrally. It is a place in our earth. And what happens is when people do the Kalachakra set of teachings very strongly, they meditate on the Kalachakra deity and the Kalachakra path, one of the results can be that they get reborn in Shambhala. Why? Because the Kalachakra teachings there are very, very alive and very much practiced. So when they take rebirth in Shambhala, what happens is They practice Kala Chakra teachings intensely to become a fully enlightened Buddha. Of course, we can practice Kala Chakra here. It's not as easy as there, but we can still practice. So what happens is that Shambhala is a land that is more pure, more better, easier to live, easier to exist than the way we exist here. Their lives are extremely long, it's said like immortal, free of disease. And what they need to eat and receive is very easy to get, free of pollution. It is in this world. And the teachings they practice is predominantly Kala Chakra that was taught by Lord Buddha to them directly. That is stated in the Kala Chakra's history. That's one. The second thing is, one of the reasons His Holiness the Dalai Lama, there are many reasons, we cannot gauge his mind, it's too vast. One of the reasons His Holiness gives the Kala Chakra teachings to large amounts of people around the world is because the Shambhala is in our world, is to get people connected. It is said during the 25th Kala Chakra king, his name slips my mind right now, during the 25th Kala Chakra king, there will be a spiritual war. People here will discover the land of Shambhala. They will try to invade. They will try to go in and take over. They will try to go inside and enter the land. So at that time, to preserve the sanctity of the place, the practice, and the people, and to protect them from the outside world, the Shambhala kings will go to war with the outside world. That's us. And what happens is the Shambhala kings themselves are highly accomplished masters because they are king and also spiritual teacher to their kingdom. They will emanate many armies. From their mind, they will emanate many, many armies, and for the first time, they will leave Shambhala to go to war. They'll go to war with the outside world because the outside world's main problem is materialism. Materialism, destruction of the environment, destruction of people's minds, destruction of people's morality and ethics, which make them totally wild. So this one, the Shambhala kings will fight, and they will come out, and they will conquer the rulers of this world. They will conquer the ruler of that time during the 25th king. When they conquer, that it's around the 24th, 25th century. When they conquer the rulers of this world, the Shambhala kings will go back, and the people will go back. The people here will have no memory of Shambhala, but the people here will go to another renaissance. They'll go back to ethics, they'll go back to morality and practice for a certain short time. Why? Because the ruler that promotes negative action will be destroyed by the Shambhala kings. So at that time, when the battle is taking place, it is said that when you receive the Kala Chakra teachings, you will be present at that time in order not to go to the wrong side, not to fall to the wrong side. So if you're on the outside world, or you're on the inside of Kala Chakra, of Shambhala, it doesn't matter. Your mind will not sway toward barbaric, materialistic, selfish thoughts. Your thoughts will go towards the practice of ethics, morality, and happiness. So one of the reasons why His Holiness gives the Kala Chakra teachings everywhere he goes around the world is to plant seeds in our minds so that when the war of Shambhala is with us, upon us, our minds will not stray toward negative action. That is one of the reasons. So Shambhala is a place that exists on this earth. Within Shambhala, the Ritens or the Dharma kings who teach the Kala Chakra Tantra and Dharma to their subjects, they're called Ritens, and their house is called Kalapa. And Kalapa court is the house of the kings of Shambhala. So the house of the kings of Shambhala has Doji Kasum or bodyguards, and they have the major domos, the main assistants, they have their liaisons, they have their ministers who help the king to run his kingdom in order that he may promote peace and teach Dharma to them. So similarly, His Eminence Shri Trungpa Rinpoche based his house on the Kalapa court. So the assignments and the names that he gave his subjects, or the name he gave his students, is based on the titles he gave the students, is based on the Kala or the Shambhala or the Kalapa court setup. And there are two reasons for that. One is when he modeled his house and his students and his lajang based on the Shambhala enlightened household, Kalapa court, when he did that, on a one level, it is organizational. It is organizing his lajang like that of the Shambhala kings so that Chögyam Trungpa can disseminate the Dharma. Because if his assistants, his liaisons, his major domo, his changse, and all these people working for him are organized and have a way to follow organized chart or an example, he's able to disseminate Dharma much better. And that's on one level. So in non-Shambhala terms, it's a lajang. Kalapakor is a lama's lajang, Chögyam Trungpa lajang. So like that, when the lajang is very organized and has people who do the work well, the Dharma can spread very fast. If the lajang is not organized, it's run by disorganized people or uncaring people or selfish people, then the lama is not able to manifest teachings to the others. Why? Shambhala's connection to the world is through Kalapakor. A lama's connection to his students or the outside world is through his lajang. So the lajang is not organized, it's very, very difficult. So what happens is that's one. Second is, because Rinpoche's household and his assistants are given titles based on Shambhala's enlightened society, which is Shambhala's pure land, and the actual household, his lajang, his members are given titles by or based on Kalapa court, then the very title given is a blessing for the students. So for the students who are given the title of the same positions as in enlightened Kalapa court, it blesses the people to attain purification of the mind, an imprint of the mind, for two things to happen. One is, they can attain Shambhala now. Two is, when they die, they can take rebirth in Shambhala. Why? Rinpoche is a Sakyong, or an ambassador of Shambhala. Meaning, he is authorized by his lineage and many lifetimes of practicing these teachings. So he has become an ambassador for the teacher, I'm sorry, for the king of Shambhala, like Malaysia has a prime minister and we have embassies all around the world. So these embassies serve as gateways or portals for other countries and cultures to interact with Malaysia. So similarly, Shambhala has the Rigdan kings. The Rigdan kings has ambassadors all over the world who act as people who spread the Shambhala teachings or the Kalachakra teachings so that it becomes a portal or an entrance way for people to take rebirth in Shambhala. So when Rinpoche gave the titles to these different people, to them it looks like a game. You saw the letters he wrote, the titles he wrote on stationery to give people in the other book and in this book. And the reason he gave these titles are to people say, oh, they're just letters, they're just, you know, funny assignments, they're just funny departments or funny titles. But actually not. Those titles are based on actual positions existent in Kalapa court in Shambhala. The real Kalapa court. So what happens is when Rinpoche gave that assignment or that title to the person, when they do it very well, they can actualize Buddhahood in this life. So instead of taking rebirth in Shambhala to practice, Shambhala takes rebirth inside of them. That's one. Second is, when they're given that title. Example, Vajrayogini has different deities on her entourage. Different deities, like Udongma, Kidongma, Pakdongma, Changchongma. So if we give someone that name, like we give child the name Udongma, so you become the deity Udongma, or that's your name, it plants a seed for you to become that entourage deity. And it plants the seeds in your mind to achieve that state of Udongma, which is the emanation of Vajrayogini's mind. So what happens is, Vajrayogini's holy land is called Kichara Paradise. In our organization, we name our organization and we live under the banner of Kichara Paradise. They live under the banner of Shambhala. There's no difference. Why? One who's born in Shambhala will practice the Dharma. One who's born in Kichara Paradise will practice the Dharma. There's no difference. But the difference is that our pure land is somewhere that we cannot see or perceive with this body at this time. Theirs is something that you can see because it's on this earth. Okay? So, Kalapa court is the royal court of the kings of Shambhala, and the kings of Shambhala are special because they have a lineage of practicing Buddhism and Dharma and the Kalachakra teachings from the previous king, from the previous kings, passed from father to son. And each king has a special duty to teach the Dharma. You're thinking, oh, is that possible? Yes. For example, the Dalai Lamas. The Dalai Lamas of Tibet are kings and gurus. They serve two functions for Tibet. So definitely possible. Definitely. So what happens is this is, when he based his organization on Shambhala, then naturally his house is the Lajang of the king, because he is the ambassador. So our ambassador in Singapore, when he goes anywhere in Singapore, will be treated like same level as a prime minister. Why? Because our ambassador in Singapore represents our country. He is the ambassador. He is representative of our leader. So same thing. Chikun Trungpa is a representative of the Rigen kings of enlightenment, of the Shambhala enlightened society. Why do we call it enlightened society? Because that society focuses on becoming enlightened. Does everybody understand that? Any questions? So when we work in the Lajang, the Lama gives us certain positions. If we carry out the positions well, it's very, very beneficial for us. If we run away or escape or we don't carry the positions well, then it will reflect on our Dharma practice. Why? Because that is Dharma practice. It is Dharma practice. So when we run away from the Lajang, we don't do the work well, or even we joke about it, oh, I don't want it, I don't like it, I can't do it. When we always run away, it's a clear sign of our practice. Most people who run away from the Lajang will be very bad in their personal practice. Why? It's similar. One is action, one is working. So you can check. People who do Lajang work and do it well, they will transform. They will change, they will transform. People who cannot do Lajang work well will run. That's why Rinpoche put many people in his Lajang. Except his Lajang is not called Chögyam Trungpa, he calls it Kalapakor. So he plans to take his students to Shambhala, inner and outer Shambhala. Inner is enlightenment, outer is a place. In other organizations, the Lamas can be taking their students to Kichara Paradise, or to Shida Heaven, or Amitabha's Western Paradise. It depends. But wherever we go, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's a place where we can practice Dharma. Whether we get teachings from Amitabha, the Rigen kings, or we get teachings from Vajrayana or Maitreya Buddha, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference. Teachings are teachings. So like that, what he's doing for his students and his household is very profound. It's very deep. Why? It hits them at many, many levels. Many, many levels. So in the beginning we had strength and we pushed ourselves and we made an effort. Those people think, oh, I work for the Lajang, I work for the society, I'm very happy, I did a good job, I rejoice. Those people who didn't have it, when they realize it later, like now, they'll think, oh, I have a lot of regrets. Why? A lot of opportunity lost. A very big opportunity lost. So like that, all Lajangs are the same everywhere. All Lamas who have good motivation or accomplished Lamas have the same methods, just different labels and different names, all the same. So in this, that's what he's talking about in short in regards to the Shambhala place, Shambhala teachings, Shambhala enlightened society, and his association with Shambhala. Okay, questions? Sure, no questions?
What's the difference between the sexual relationships they were having and like someone just going to a swinging party or having...
What's the difference between the sexual relationships they're having and...
And like people that go to swingers parties or, you know, engage in being swinging couples?
No difference except that out of their sexual activities they were doing Dharma. Whereas the swinging couples, once they leave it, they're not doing any Dharma. So what's the difference between people in his organization and people outside doing that? People are people. Both sides have sexual desire. Both sides are hungry. Both sides need love. Both sides make mistakes. But you see, on their spare time, they actually did Dharma practice and did work for their Lama. Whereas the swinging couples, nothing else, basically. So there's a difference that the action itself is sexual gratification, I agree, and there's nothing enlightened about that. But at that time, it was necessary. See, during Chökyam Trungpa's time in the 60s and 70s, it was very necessary because free sex, open love, flower power against the establishment, hippieism, and all that was very in. So if you made a lot of restrictions for people at that time, they would find that very difficult because that's what society and establishment was telling them. You have to get married, you can't have sex with anybody, you know, you have to work, you have to go to college. So these people are already fighting that. And you have to understand something, the type of people that Chökyam Trungpa was targeting was not the mainstream conservative people. It was more the people who were not mainstream inclined, the hippies. So hence, the type of people he targeted elicited the type of action that he had to use on them to transform their minds. So instead of making more restrictions for them, he let them engage in what they were already doing besides before meeting him. But what happens to these people 10 years down the line, 15 years, 20 years down the line? They cleaned up. They got into real relationships. They had kids. They went to work. They became proper. They became publishers. They became writers. They became course holders. They became professors of Naropa Institute. They completely transformed. So if they didn't meet Rinpoche and they were just having free sex and having fun, today they still might be doing what they're doing, professors and all that stuff, but without any Dharma at all. So the difference is that. Do you understand? So he created a society where, yeah, you can have sex and free sex and have fun and all that stuff, swinging parties, singles parties, and, you know, couples parties. But after the party, what's the difference? After the party. Everything we do is not so different than anybody else out there. But you see, with us, there is some Dharma involved. So there is some cultivation of higher practices. Cultivation. Then there's some difference for us after the party. That's why people in the Dharma, for example, when they're older, they're very happy. They're not depressed, bitter, older people shopping or wanting money or complaining or fighting. But they're older people who are content and happy and they create enlightened energy around them. Example, I've not met a bitter old monk in Ganden. I've not seen one monk. You've seen them, the old ones. You don't see them bitter. You don't see them unhappy. You don't see them. They're very, very content and they die in beautiful manners. Manifesting enlightenment. So my point is, but older people we see around here, or any around here, I mean anywhere outside, quite bitter, quite unhappy, and always shouting and fighting and demanding and pushing and saying you don't give me enough. Whereas older people in the Dharma, very different. A lifetime of cultivation. So what were they doing there that's different than swinging couples? Nothing. When they were having sex, it was sex. When they're enjoying themselves, they're enjoying themselves. But afterwards, there was a difference. So I think if Rinpoche put a lot of restrictions on them in that way, they wouldn't be doing Dharma. They wouldn't be accepting to say no. It's just another of societal restrictions. They wouldn't accept. Do you understand that? Does everybody understand that? I'm not justifying or explaining. This is how I see it in what he's doing. It could be more, it could be wrong, it could be different, but that's how I see it. Why? Because I'm fast-forwarding now to the results. People like this writing books like this about it. Because it wasn't just about the sex. Okay? Questions? Is a horse that rides on the wind and is likened to speed. In Tibetans, we do prayers. When we do prayers, we visualize a horse on its back as a container and many prayers. And it flies up to the heavens and it offers these prayers to the three jewels. So it's symbolic of offering prayers to the three jewels of a wind horse. So we make prayer flags called Lung Da. The Lung Da prayer flags have the wind horse in the center surrounded by a lot of mantras. So when the wind blows it, it's considered that we bring the prayers up to the three jewels. That's one. Second thing is this. The real wind horse is this, is awareness. When we have awareness, when we ride this horse of awareness, we can excel and reach our destiny very fast. So the wind horse is likened to awareness, creating aware mind. Without the awareness of the mind, the horse cannot travel, never mind a wind horse, which is very fast. So it is talking about awareness and creating awareness, having an aware mind for people around us, their needs, their wants, their pain, their problems, and not having people tell us, but being in the room or being in the place, and you're aware of everything around you. And that's likened to a wind horse. Okay? Questions? Questions?
What is the tukul disease?
Tukul disease is same. Let me make you a simple example. If you're born and you're a guy and you're attracted to guys and they force you to get married and have kids, will you be happy? Will you be depressed? Will you be sad? Will you be lonely? Will you be angry? That's a disease. Because you're born and forced to do something you can't do. Similarly, when a Rinpoche takes rebirth, the purpose of them is to learn the Dharma, open up the seeds from their previous lives, and carry on the work that they have prayed for in their previous lives, which is to spread the Dharma either by teaching or by action. When they're not allowed to do that, the karma to do that is very strong. Therefore, it affects their activity and their mind. So other things they need to do, they cannot do. Become like blur, become like retarded, become like stupid, become like sick, and some Rinpoches actually die. Why? The karma to do the Dharma work is very, very strong. So for certain Rinpoches, when they're very young, their karma to do Dharma is very, very strong. No matter what obstacles they face, it doesn't bring them down. It doesn't bring them down at all. For some Rinpoches, when they experience a lot of obstacles because their time to die hasn't come, their time to die has not come, they will try to commit suicide, or they will try to do suicide, or they contemplate suicide. Why? Because the karma to do Dharma is so strong, other karma is overridden, it's overshadowed. So if they can't do it, they think, what's the purpose of it? They rather die. So tukul disease can manifest in suicide, or wanting to kill themselves, or wanting to have suicide. Why? Because it's not time for them to die. So they cannot die, they cannot go, but they also don't want to sit around and eat and have a good time and just go to school or enjoy samsara. So it can come in that way. For some Rinpoches, it will come as in cannot talk, become dumb, become unable to function. Why? Because the karma to do Dharma is not strong. Example, we had one Rinpoche down in Ganden, who when he was very little, he was snuck out of Tibet. And when he came to the monasteries, his parents decided to send him to school in Dharamsala. When he went to school in Dharamsala, he went up there remembering his previous lives. He had a little bit of clairvoyance. He can reveal people's past directly by looking at them. He was very, very young. I saw him myself. And what happened was, when he was sent to Dharamsala to go to TCV, Tibetan Children's Village, or Tibetan School, to learn normal education, after 1 year, he stopped talking. He was very young. He cannot talk. You talk to him, he cannot register. He just sat there like this, looking at you. And he lost all ability to talk. So when they did divination with Kensuke Rinpoche and Lakhdi Rinpoche, they brought him down immediately. He had tukul disease. So when they brought him back to Ganden, it took another year for him to start talking. They had to do a lot of purification because he ate normal food, he shared food with other kids, he did activity with other kids, he became dirty. So what happens, they had to do purification. There's purification called Chakchu, I saw this, to purify his body, speech, and mind, to open up the seeds from his previous life, and to eat clean foods, and to be in clean environment, to hold his monk vows. And then after 1 year, his speech became very quick, his mind became very quick, very, very fast. I saw that with my own eyes. And this is a small child. So it's not a mind game. 3 or 4 years old. That's one. Some Rinpoches, when you don't let them manifest their job to do work, they will die. some of this time. Some, if you don't let them do work, they'll get married, they have kids, they live a normal life. Why? That one also they cannot manifest, so they just do something else. Some die, some just get married, some become sick. What is a tubal disease? A tubal disease is someone who is supposed to do Dharma very strongly, but cannot do Dharma due to environmental situation. So they go into remission. Okay, that's the power of karma. Questions?
Goes into remission, does it just start again in the next life?
Either this life or next life, depending on situation. This life or next life. Why? On what basis? The merits and the karma they have implanted or the attainments cannot be taken away. It's dormant. So it's remission because it's in dormancy, or it's dormant or staying for the chance to open up. Dormancy or dormant means there but cannot open if ready to open.
Suicide.
They die, they take rebirth again.
Is there no time involved with taking your own life?
Depends on the quality of the tubal. If the tubal is very high quality, they can even kill people, they won't go to hell. It depends on the quality of the tubal. Why? When Buddha was a bodhisattva, he killed other people to save the lives of other people. So the quality of the tubal is very, very important. The quality and the motivation and the reason. So if they kill themselves, it's still a negative action, but it will be less negative than living a whole life wasted. Definitely. So there are tubals when they're very young, like Chicken Tumbum, he wants to commit suicide. You remember? Anybody remember reading that? Do you remember? Early in the book,
yes.
He himself wanted to commit suicide many times because he couldn't do Dharma work. He said, what's the purpose, Father? What's the purpose? He himself wanted to commit suicide. Questions? This phenomenon of tubal disease happens to all Rinpoches, all Lamas, everywhere, beyond sect, beyond time, beyond country. Just because they're in Tibet, it happens? No. Even when they're in other countries, when they're not in their culture, nobody knows about it, it happens to them. Why? Karma is pervasive. Karma happens everywhere. It's not dependent on society. A real tuku, a real reincarnation, their qualities will manifest no matter where they are. How the quality manifests will depend on the society because their purpose is to benefit. Their purpose is to help. So how they help depends on where they are, because different tukus have different connections and different affinity for different people in different places. Since they have different connections for different places, different people, how they manifest will be different, but they must manifest it. Why? It's the power of their prayers. It's like a person is supposed to be born as an animal, they have to be born as an animal. But being born as an animal, a dog, doesn't mean they don't have the karma to be born as a human or a god. It's only dormant. But at the time of death, how they think will trigger where they take rebirth. Why? Everything is dormant. You understand that? Questions? Do you understand dormant? Do you understand dormant? What? I understand English. Okay, questions? Come on, you understand more? Good. What points stick out in your mind? The point you need to go to Susie's to get a haircut? Maybe that point sticks out in your mind, huh? Since we have to go for the exhibition and represent Dharma well. That's good. It's called compassion. Why don't you just get your hair done like him, then you don't have to ever go again. Be solved. You can do it in Khao San Road, what? Okay, so what stuck out in your mind?
Well, quality or even the way that the position of the Champana also is really future plan versus for now.
It's not just for now. It has double meaning. To organize the place now, to have some example, and also to plant the seeds for them to take rebirth in the future. Working in a Lama's Ladrang, the benefit is tremendous. People don't realize that. That's why when we work in a Ladrang, I worked in my Lama's Ladrang for many years. It makes you very aware. It pushes you to the next level. It collects a tremendous amount of merit. Why does it collect a tremendous amount of merit? Because you're doing work for other people directly from the Lama. Directly. So if you work in the Ladrang, you collect a tremendous amount of merit. Whereas every day passes, if you work somewhere else, it's not the same. It's not the same. Just think, those people who work in Dalai's Ladrang directly, they don't sleep. They have to work very hard. They have to travel all the time. They don't have any personal lives. They can't get married. They hardly see their families. But they work with Dalai 24 hours all the time. Even when he gives the Kala Chakra teachings, when they go to other countries, they have to go before he goes. They have to prepare the sign mandalas. They have to prepare the place. They have to prepare the temple. They have to do the rituals. They have to stay up all night. If you look at the Kala Chakra videos, I got Kala Chakra videos she gave me. Even the monks stay up all night and all day making tarmas in preparation. They don't ever get to sleep. They have no personal lives. So what do they get out of that? They know the benefit, because the Dalai Lama is so beneficial to sentient beings. So when they do his work, it's very powerful. Like the Dalai Lama, each Lama has work and affinity with many beings. If the Ladrang is organized well, it will benefit many people. And the people working the Ladrang has tremendous opportunity to reach happiness and bring happiness to others. People who are very selfish, the truth is, people who are very selfish cannot work in the Ladrang. Why? They cannot think about others, they only think about themselves. Oh, I don't have time. Oh, I don't have enough sleep. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, I don't get any freedom. I don't get this. I want this. I don't have that. And I can't function. They always complain, they make noise. Why? When you work in the Ladrang, how selfish you are will come out very clearly. How selfish you are. And for people who know how to look at that, they say, oh, the solution is not to run away, the solution is to push myself, because I know how I am. Some people say, I'm not ready. If you're not ready for the Ladrang, you will never be ready for anything. Why is that? Time doesn't stand still. Time doesn't stand still. So people who have the chance to work in a Ladrang, we consider very, very fortunate. Because I worked in a Ladrang. I worked very hard for many, many years. Many years. Cleaned and cooked and washed. Stayed up the whole night. When I worked in Geshe-la's Ladrang in America, I hardly got to sleep. And went on for years. And not only that, Sovereignty was with us also. I made tormas, I prepared, had to get the pujas done, and attended the pujas. After the pujas, Geshe-la go upstairs, I clean up. I did that for many years. And it was very helpful for me. Why? Let's be very honest. Let's be very, very honest. And I'm going to say this without any pride. I'm going to say it to be the truth. There are people in our organization who's been with me for 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. 5 years ago, how was I and how were they? Now, how am I different? How are they different? There are people in the organization who are with me 8 years ago or 10 years ago. Some who were with me 10 years ago and now, some even ran away, don't want to do Dharma work, hide in their room, play, and just avoid. But myself, my Dharma work has grown. My benefit to people has grown. My teaching has grown. My center has grown. My organization has grown. Everything has grown. But these people who are with me, they become worse or less or even disappear. But they're with me 10 years. No transformation. Why is that? Because I'm better than them? No. I put in the effort. So 10 years later, there are people who are students with me in Malaysia that I know 10 years ago. They're still into their self. They're still into the hiding in their room. They still avoid Dharma work. They still avoid many, some even avoid our center and hide somewhere else. Their Dharma knowledge didn't increase. Their Dharma work didn't increase. Their Dharma action didn't increase. Their Dharma attitude, even their Dharma attitude never increased. Now I'm sitting on the throne teaching and people prostrate to me. People make offerings to me, give me gifts. Almost every day I get gifts and sponsorship and help. Why? because I'm better than them? No. How can I be better than them? Because I have a title of a Rinpoche? Because my previous life did Dharma? No. Because I made the effort. I made the effort. So there are still people who know me 8 years ago, 9 years ago. They're completely different than me now. Like that, if I keep making the effort to teach, to give myself to others, to give my time to others, to care for others, to constantly promote the Dharma, even 1 year, 2 year, 3 year later, I'll become even bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Why? Because I'm great? No. Effort. Effort. Many years of effort. I never gave up on myself. I know what I wanted. So there are people in my group that we saw, we know. Some have completely disappeared. Completely. Some say negative things and hide. Some are still with me, but they're still sitting on the floor and I'm sitting on the throne. Why is it people prostrate to me? Why is it people make offerings to me? Why is it people fold their hands to me? Why? Because they recognize my effort. Is my effort make me holy? No. But I can say for sure in my life, for sure, this is no ego trip. I have put other people ahead than myself. Whether I'm holy or not, this I don't know. Whether I'm a higher Rinpoche from previous life, I don't know. I don't remember anything from my previous life. But one thing for sure, this one I can say careful. I care about other people more than myself. This one's for sure. So I have no magic power. I have no clairvoyance. I don't remember my previous lives. I really don't. I don't have any big significant dreams. I cannot blow on people like anyone, heal them. I cannot control the weather. I can't do much. But one thing for sure I know I have. This is since I'm young. I care about other people very much. And if I know someone else needs help or something, I will go out of my way 100% to do what I can for them. This one I know I have. This one is like show off? No, I'm talking about human quality. I'm not the only one in this world that has that quality. There are many people with that quality. That's what makes you stand out. So people prostrate to me. I go to disco. I do all kinds of bad things before. But people today still, even the people I did bad things with today, still prostrate to me. Still respect me. Still come and receive teachings from me. Why? What makes me different than them? Because I put in effort for others. Does that make me more holy? You can call it holy or you can call it just being yourself. I think other people are more important than me. So I can give teachings, I can give my money away, I can give my help away, I can give time, I can give advice, I can give energy, I can put the extra mile, I can get sick for others. That's what people appreciate. So people prostrate to me, and people show respect to me and fold their hands to me and recite my long life prayers and do mantras and donate money to me. Why? Because they see I put effort. That's all. It's very simple. It's simple. It's really not a joke. Just put effort. If you don't put effort toward others and yourself, no one's going to love you. No one's going to care for you. No one is going to look at you and you will lose respect for yourself. So there are people with me 8 years. 8 years ago, I'm the same as them. I don't have so many hundreds of students. Nobody knows me on the internet. I don't have any money. I live in a little crappy apartment just like everybody else. That time I don't have money. That time that monk had more money than me. But why is it now it's the opposite? Why? Because I put effort. Is it because I'm a Rinpoche and I'm on a throne? No. There's a lot of people out there who don't like Rinpoches. There are more people in the world who don't like the Dalai Lama than people who like the Dalai Lama. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. So for me, I have had many students who've been with me and many friends who've been with me for over 10 years in our group. Many. Why is it they're still in their same situation and I'm not? One difference. I made an effort. I helped people more, I took more time, I SMS more, I called more, I gave more effort, I talked to them more, I gave away my things more. That's the difference. So that's what makes me a Rinpoche. That must be my previous life already developed the quality to do that. Maybe. Or maybe in this life, maybe I didn't develop that quality, but maybe in this life I was blessed by my guru to listen to the teachings of caring for others more than oneself. So I accepted the teachings and I practiced it my whole life. So it can be two ways. It can be my previous life, very strong karma now, or it can be this life, I was blessed to listen to it. But that doesn't matter. The difference is this. I made an effort and it has results. Even some people who met me 2-3 years ago, now I'm very different than 2-3 years ago already. Very different. In benefiting others, in helping others, in doing things, in having money to help others, where I live, what I drive, what I have, is very dramatically different than 2-3 years ago. I didn't do all that to get all this. I didn't sit there and say, okay, if I do this, I'll get a nice car, a nice house, I get respect, people give me this. I didn't think that at all. I thought if I can help others, I can live, I'll be happy. And that makes a difference. To think about others and to make an effort for others. There's a lot of disappointment, but it will be more disappointing if we think about ourselves and not others. Much more disappointing. Much, much more. Why? We can look at the examples around us. Our parents, our friends who are bitter and unhappy, older people run away, how bitter and unhappy they are. That's our choice. So I'm on the throne with brocade and respect and all this, and I'm called a Rinpoche, and people take pictures of me, and people donate to me and help me. Why? Effort. Effort. To make effort for others. Does that make me more holy? Maybe. But one thing for sure, it makes people appreciate you much more. So when people appreciate you much more, in the interdependency, when you're interdependent with people, people give you back what you give them. So what I teach you today about interdependency applies to myself too. So when I tell you, oh, I'm so much better, I'm so much higher, I'm so much greater, I sit on a higher chair than all my peers or all my friends around me, I'm not putting myself up. I'm not trying to compare. I'm telling you that is a fact. If you care about others and you work for others, the result is much better. If you care about yourself and work for yourself, year after year, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, you're still poor, you still don't have love, emotionally poor or financially poor or both. It's the same. So why is it some of my friends I know 10 years ago in Malaysia, I know them now still, you guys, some of you know them, they're nowhere. Alone, unhappy, bitter, because they only think about themselves. Thinking about yourselves brings all unhappiness. Thinking about others brings all happiness. Both is a lot of work. Thinking about yourself alone is a lot of work. So we have to think that way. But to meditate on the truth. I'm not complimenting myself or putting other people down or comparing. No. I'm giving you a clear example using myself. Why? It's the only example that both of us know. You think about yourself, you will suffer. You concentrate on yourself, you will suffer. If you think about others and make others happy, you will become happy. If you make others back happy and take responsibility and push and work hard for others, you will have respect. And people will look at you. And people will be moved by you. And people will cry when they see you. And people will write you beautiful letters and emails. And people will donate to you. And people will take care of you. People will massage you and feed you. And even when you're old, people will make sure you're fine, you're taken care of. And when you die, they'll bury you with great honors and carefully. Or they'll burn you with great respect. And then when your reincarnation comes back, it'll be much easier than everybody else's reincarnation. If you think of others and take care of others. That's the truth, that's what Buddha taught. So I have food now, I have money, I have a nice car, a nice house, I have respect. I have people prostrating, giving me gifts all the time. All the time. Why? Because I'm a Rinpoche? No. Trust me, it's not because I'm a Rinpoche. If it's because I'm a Rinpoche, I would be super rich by now. Everything would be fine. No trouble at all for the last 10 years. Because I put more effort toward others and people have recognized it now. And that's a human quality. Because I realize I depend on other people. One high lama, Kinsung Nawa Nima Rinpoche, of Gomar monasteries in Mongolia. I met him in 1988. And he made it very simple. He says, when you go to Ganden, you better study. And he's very old that time. And he's a teacher of Chagongji. He's a Mongolian geshe, a great ex-abbot of Gomar. And he was one of the few people who scolded Dalai Lama. Why? During teachings, he would be on the floor, you know, on a cushion, Dalai Lama would be on the throne, and there would be hundreds of people. And sometimes Dalai Lama manifests, he forgot something. He said, hey, what scripture was that in? I can't remember where that was in. I can't remember where this was in. I can't remember this. Did any of you geshes or any of you abbots remember? And all the abbots would be quiet. The geshes would be quiet. But this old Mongolian abbot, he's skinny and small with thin arms, would say, it's in this text, on this page, and this paragraph. And Dalai Lama would think, oh yeah, that's right. Then the cancer and she would say to him, isn't it there? And by everybody, see, isn't it like that? And then Dalai Lama would say, oh yes sir. Because he's so old, and he's such a great teacher, and plus he's the guru of the Dalai Lama's brothers. The Dalai Lama has three brothers, two of which are Rinpoche's. He is also the guru of Dalai Lama's brothers. He's a very great master. We have his picture in Gichara Paradise. His name is Khyentse Nama Nyima. And my point is what? He is such a great master. He would talk like that down. Of course he wasn't scolding the Dalai Lama, but he was a hot-headed, hot-tempered Mongolian. So he'd be very direct. So he's the only one that pointed at Dalai Lama and said, isn't it there? Isn't it like that? And Dalai Lama would be, yes sir. Which shows you how humble the Dalai Lama is. At the same time, shows you what a great master he is, and his actions as you show him. Anyways, I met him because he said, I'm Mongolian, I should go to Drepung Boman, I shouldn't stay in Ganden Shatse. He threw a real big BF with me and screamed at me and told me off. I said, no, I'm not. And anyways, I'm not going, I'm staying in Ganden. And he says, there is no such tradition as a Mongolian going to Ganden. None. There's no Mongols. They must go to Drepung Boman. You must come to Drepung Boman. Because when I first went to the monastery, a few monasteries fought for me to join them. So I said, no, I'm not going to go there. He says, no good things will happen to you if you go there. I said, okay. And he even said to me, if you go there, because they're protected by six-armed Mahakala. Six-armed Mahakala won't leave you alone. Then I said back to him, I said, well, if six-armed Mahakala doesn't leave me alone, he doesn't have any compassion. He said, oh, you got a big mouth. He scolded me, so big. No manners at all. Young monk like that can talk to me like that. I said, well, you told me he's going to get me one. And then I left. And then a few minutes later, he sent his attendant out and called me back. He said, look, I'm Mongolian, you're Mongolian, let's not fight. Never mind what happened. Here's a shirt, you study well, I pray for you. I said, thank you, Rinpoche. Very kind. Very fierce, but very, very kind, Rinpoche. And he said to me, I used to go visit him. If I didn't study, he would ignore me. He said, come visit me. So when I go visit him, he sits there like this. Because he hears. So he said to me once, let me make it very simple for you. Because he probably thought, oh God, he probably thought he's quite stupid, so let's make it simple for him. If you study the Dharma when you're old, people will feed you. Now go study. So I thought about it. How much people respect him? How much people offer him respect, even Dalai Lama, because he studied and became a great master? And how many people he offers refuge and help and assistance to? In the end, I cried when he died because I was very moved by him. He's so fierce, he's so hot-mouthed. It's very difficult for his attendants to serve him because he's very fierce, but extremely kind. Very knowledgeable and a great, great Dharma master. He's in KP. So when he died, I was so moved. I used to go see him all the time. Every time I go, I get a scolding all the time. It's very rare he says something nice, but his heart is very soft. Because after he scolds, he'll give you a gift. You already know what kind of person he is. And he was very respected in Switzerland. He was invited to Switzerland. And people loved him. People requested him to give teachings. Oh, that was in the 60s and 70s. He wouldn't stay there. He wouldn't have a nice house or nothing. He wouldn't collect donations. He'd go back to the monastery to give teachings in the monks. Because why? A lot of young monks need to become geshes and teachers. Not enough teachers. He went to teach. He lived his whole life teaching. Whole life. Even the monastery provided him. He never built his own house. He never had a big residence. Nothing. He concentrated only on teaching. And when he was so old, the whole monastery respected him so much and loved him. Wherever he walked around, people helped him, assist him. Where people see him, they will hide or cover. Because in Tibetan, if you meet a high master, you don't stand there, oh, hi, how are you? You're supposed to hide. Or if you run on the street with them, you keep your head down and you fold your hands. Because respect is not to look at them. Respect is keep quiet. So when he walked on the street, it was like, everything disappeared. Like the whole monastery is empty. Wherever he walked, it was all clear. Nobody would dare walk against him. Why? So much respected. His name is Kensurumji Mawanima. And I put his picture up in KP. It's a black and white picture of a Mongolian Geshe, so that when people see him, they'll be blessed. Very much blessed. He's a great Geshe of Gomang Monastery. So I've seen examples like that. Anyway, my point is this, is he told me that. If you study the Dharma, when you're old, you have something to eat. People will feed you. He told me in Mongolian. We speak Mongolian with each other directly. So my point is, what is the meaning is much greater than that. Now I realize I'm not like him at all, but people respect me and give me food and donate and help me do things for me. Not only because I know a little bit of the Dharma, but I think it's more the effort I make towards people. So, you get it all back. You get it all back. If you think about yourself and you're selfish, and you don't push yourself, you don't improve, you don't create awareness, you always run away, no one respects you. If no one respects you, you won't be happy even if you have a lot of food and money. You won't be happy. Why? Because we need social interaction, because we're interdependent. Interdependent. And that's a fact of life. It's just a simple fact of life. You care for others, people care for you. You don't care for others, no one cares for you. So what makes us unhappy and depressed and hate ourselves is our selfishness. All very logical, very clear. That's the incredible thing about Dharma, is that on a higher level it has a lot of meaning, and on a very normal level it's also very penetratively deep. It penetrates through. Completely it cuts through. Even on a normal level it's very, very logical. And on a higher level it has a very great meaning. The Dharma is incredible. So imagine you have Dharma teachers like me that you think is great. I'm nothing. If I'm something, imagine my Guru. And if my Guru is something, imagine how Shakyamuni himself was. Beyond our imagination. By seeing our teacher and his qualities, we gain faith in the Buddha. Even if you have stupid teachers like me that have very little better qualities, but even the little bit of qualities help people, imagine my Guru, and imagine his Guru, and imagine Buddha Shakyamuni himself. Incredible. Just incredible. We think that's why by indirect means we gain faith in Shakyamuni. Because if our teachers can make that much effort towards us, imagine how Shakyamuni was. Beyond imagination. Totally mind blowing. Totally mind blowing. Any questions? No questions? Then we end our session today. This is the latest session I've had. Usually we finish around 12, but we started late. You guys had the things to do. Okay, good. Again, we spent about 2.5-3 hours on listening, contemplating, and thinking about the Dharma. And our body is within the Dharma by restraining it here, and our speech is controlled by not speaking except on the Dharma, and our mind is focused on the Dharma, listening to the Dharma. These 3 hours are wonderful, but we need to translate these 3 hours into the 21 hours left in the day. Just like the 45 minutes or half hour we do our sadhanas must be translated into 23 hours left in the day. If we don't translate it into those hours, and we've wasted so much time. The 23 hours in a day That is, besides our sadness and prayers and making offerings and prostrations and whatnot, we must make our actions Dharma. So working for the Dharma doesn't make our actions Dharma. In fact, working in the Dharma can be totally non-Dharma if our motivation is easy life, not concerned for others, not taking responsibility, and making others cover for us all the time and taking responsibility for us, then it's not Dharma work. Dharma work is not really the work. Dharma work is an attitude to benefit others. So, if the 23 hours of a day, every day, spent like this, as I showed you earlier in the chart, 21 hour in meditation a day, or sadhanas and offerings, the 23 hours in samsara. And 23 hours is 564 hours in a month, 6,768 hours in a year. This one is much more important than this. This is 1 hour of practice a day, 1 hour of meditation sadhana a day. That equals 28 hours a month, or 336 hours per year. This one and this one has a much more powerful effect. This is what you should focus on, not this one. We want our habits to change. We want our mind to transform. We want love. We want care. We want respect. We want things to improve. We have to focus on this. Why? If we add more time and effort towards something, we get the result. If we focus on this, we remain as we are. If we focus on this, we transform. Why? Very simple. More time towards something creates more result. So we have to think about that very, very carefully. Very, very carefully. So people ask, why don't they change? Because the 23 hours a day are wasted on gossip, selfish mind, sleep. And even the 23 hours a day, how many of us are attached to sleep? How many of us are attached to sleep? After so many years, still the mind didn't transform to push ourselves beyond sleep. Can? If you read in Lama Sopa's book, Lama Sopa has three assistants. Lama Sopa doesn't sleep. He teaches, does divinations, and helps people. The three assistants take turns. One sleeps, the other two helps. Then another one sleeps, another two helps. So there's always someone there 24 hours a day. Rinpoche's assistants all rest, but Rinpoche never sleeps. I read that recently. Why? Because he pushed himself. They didn't. Very simple. So if we don't do work and Dharma work or Lajang work or KH work, or we don't do the work because we're attached to sleep in ourselves, then please expect no respect. Please expect no love, no help, and anger, and also hating yourself. That's how it ends up. Why? Because you run away from yourself. KH, Dharma work, your Lama's work, Lajang work is all just methods for us to reach the next level. If we run away from the methods, how can we reach the next level? If we don't reach the next level, how can we be happy or command respect or get help and get love? And we just hide every day. Every day is wasted. So we should expect unhappiness, disrespect, losing love, alienation, hiding, insecurity, fear of discovery, and deep regret that so many years have wasted. Deep regret. People will alienate us, people will lose respect for us, we'll lose friends and lose health, we'll be alone, we'll be very bitter, very unhappy. And on top of that, we will have deep regret for so many years we have wasted. And you know what's the horrible thing? Is that we can never get the years back. Once it's gone, it is gone. So instead of looking back and becoming depressed, we should look back as an impetus for something to push us forward. Do we want to have the remaining years of our life attached to sleep, food, fun, laziness, doing nothing, entertainment, computers? Is that all we want to be attached to? Just like in Chögyam Trungpa's case, they had their sex parties. Well, we can have sex parties too, but our sex parties don't need to be sex. Our sex parties can be playing on the computer, going out, sleeping, watching TV, what should be combined with Dharma. We have to stop running away from ourselves. Stop inviting disrespect. You like people looking down on you? Do you like feeling you're useless? Do you like going with the crowd and feeling that people don't care about you, or you're nothing, or you're nobody? Do you like feeling how people look down on you? Do you like every year going further, one more year, you've accomplished nothing, done nothing? Do you enjoy all that? And then if you say, well, it's okay, I can put up with it, but the feeling that comes along with it, no one enjoys. And then how much you depend on other people? You give everything back, or you take too much? You take so much, you give nothing back. If you're someone that takes so much, you give nothing back, how can you expect happiness? The very reason you take more and give less is so that you can be happy. You want an advantage over others. But in the end, if you're not happy, is it an advantage? So we have to think, the very reason I do that is for happiness, is to gain some relief, some happiness. So if I do that and I'm not gaining happiness, why do that? Why be selfish? Why be lazy? Why not take responsibility? Why? The whole reason is to gain happiness. Every action we do is motivated to get happiness. Every action we do, whether the action is done right or wrong, the motivation is self-happiness. The motivation is self-happiness. The whole reason we do actions for ourselves is to be happy. So if we're not getting happiness from being lazy, why be lazy? If we're not getting happiness from sleeping and attaching to sleep, why be sleepy all the time? If people are always scolding us and because we're not doing our job and we're irresponsible, why continue to be irresponsible? Why? I don't understand why. Because why? The reason we want to be happy, but we're not becoming happy. So why engage in action that gets you the opposite of what you want? Simply because it takes more effort to be the opposite? I think it takes more effort to hide from people's disrespect for you. I think it takes more respect to always be a loser. I think it takes more effort to always be with other people who are getting better and better and you're getting nowhere. I think it's more harder to hide from one's shame and embarrassment of accomplishing nothing. I think it's more effort to keep quiet and not fight back when people shout at you because you've hurt them again. I think it takes more effort than that. I think it's less effort to be responsible. I think it's less effort to work hard. I think it's less effort to push yourself and to accomplish something, to do something, to be committed. I think it's less effort than the opposite. Why? You have to cover. You have to escape. You have to run. You have to hide. That's a lot of effort. And it's quite tiresome. So if we keep hiding and running and avoiding, the result will be bitterness, anger, loneliness, alienation. Alienation means what? To be separated from others and people, and to be alone. So either way, it's going to be an effort. Why not an effort towards something that leads you to happiness? That's how I think of it. So what motivates me to work hard for others and do things for others? Because I'm basically a lazy person. I like to lay around, do nothing. My free time is lay around, do nothing, watch TV. What makes me do that is because either way it's going to be effort. If I end up nowhere, it's going to be a lot of effort to take care of myself, find money, and survive. It's better I put effort now. Much better. Either way it's going to be effort. When people look down on you, it's a lot of effort to avoid. When you get kicked out or people lose respect for you and they don't want to be around you, it's a lot of effort to sustain yourself and your emotions. Why? They don't want you. You've been rejected. That's a very heavy emotional expenditure or emotional toll. When you're older and you have very little hair and you've accomplished very little, it is a very heavy emotional payment. When you've disappointed people around you again and again and again and again, and hurt them by your laziness, is a very heavy emotional toll. Why? Because eventually you lose the people you love. loneliness doesn't come from helping people. Loneliness comes from not helping people. Bitterness doesn't come from helping people. Bitterness comes from not helping people. Hating oneself doesn't come because you don't have knowledge, money, education, or status. Hating yourself comes from being selfish. That all makes a lot of sense. So when we think about what I've explained and we meditate on it, the reason we meditate for 1 hour or 45 minutes a day or half hour or we do our sadhana is so that 23 hours what I've spoken to you we can put into action. If you don't utilize the 23 hours a day, deep regrets, loneliness, sadness, unhappiness, fear. That's all that awaits us. Don't wait till the results hit you and then you do something. It can be too late. Think about all that I've said. Think the reason why we're here. Think the reason why we're alive. What we've accomplished, what we've not accomplished. What's our priority? Make it very simple. Do I want to still think about myself more than others? Do I want to still think about myself more than others? Think carefully. If you do, you know the results. If you don't, you know the results. Therefore, it is all in your hands. No God or Buddha or Dharma protector or any human can change your destiny but yourself. That's what Lord Buddha spoke. I am not a God. I am not a sage. And I can't control you or change you. But I can teach you the Dharma that I have realized. And if you practice what I have realized, you will become a fully awakened Buddha also. That's what our Lord Buddha taught us. He's more than a God. Much more. Because he teaches us what to do to become a God. To become a Buddha. So our choice is this. Be selfish. Not take responsibility. Push the burden onto others. And keep on doing things that benefit ourselves and not others. Which equals that unhappiness, bitterness, loneliness, alienation, and people hate us and we hate ourselves. Or effort, diligence, generosity, compassion, and that will equal to respect, care, social standing, mental development, strength, and a clear and deep sense of appreciation from others and we loving ourselves. Hating ourselves is the biggest disease of 21st century, and that comes from the selfish mind that takes refuge in material world, materialism, material items to escape from our unhappiness. It's the biggest disease of 21st century. Where there is no Dharma, let there be the Dharma. Where there is Dharma, let it become strong. Where there is a misunderstanding of Dharma, may we take on the personal responsibility to spread it. In this life and all future lives, may we never be separated ever from Lord Buddha and his holy disciples and his pure lineage. May we always come across Dharma teachers and masters, if not the Buddha himself, to receive Dharma, to listen, to be pleased, and to be happy, and to enact, and also gain accomplishments. May we make our priorities development of the mind, development of the spirit, and focus on others. All the forces that are good out in the universe, in the 10 directions, and 3 times. All the forces of goodness, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and enlightened beings, please give us your attention. Bless us, so that we may take the focus away from ourselves and onto others. This monstrous demon of selfishness is the author of all of our unhappiness. Realizing this and fear for more unhappiness, we take refuge in the six paramitas. Taking refuge means living them. May we gain realizations day by day, understanding day by day. May we not waste our human life and the trivialities and the small, small activities of this life that has brought us nowhere, that gets us nowhere, that will get us nowhere in the future. May our Dharma practice become our priority and our priority become Dharma practice, inseparable. Why? Because Dharma practice leads to the reality of our existence and a real, definite, clear hope for the future. I take refuge in Shakyamuni. I take refuge in Shakyamuni's speech. And I take refuge in Shakyamuni's body. I take refuge in the body, speech, and mind of Shakyamuni and no other. May I become accomplished just like Shakyamuni Buddha. That's all. Make your cell groups grow, take care of each other, make your cell groups practice together and support each other and help each other. Let your cell group members not take advantage of each other, but grow. So it grows into mundra groups where you do spiritual preparational practices in the future or four preparational practices such as prostrations in the future together. Also make your cell groups grow into tantra groups where you actually receive tantra together and practice tantra, support each other and teach each other and share with each other on the practices of tantra. So that whether your guru is alive or dead, you will be able to support yourself in the future in order to do tantric practice to be a benefit to others. So make your cell groups grow, make your cell groups support each other and help each other, make it a unit as part of one unit as part of a big spiritual family. And then be ready for other cell group members to join your group so that you set a good example by body, speech, and mind to encourage their Dharma practice so that they may also find a way out of loneliness, rejection, dejection, illusions, and all types of fabricated unhappiness. Make the cell groups grow, encourage, help, love, take care, be sincere, be honest, and be open, and get together on social and non-social occasions. 취지적으로.
当心里就存在，结果从你那边，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，结果从上天发来的，他发来的，